afternoon, and welcome to Tuesday's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, sitting in for Melody today. For all your gold and silver needs, call us toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you some opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day. It is Tuesday, October 12, 2021. Happy National Farmers Day. It's also National Savings Day. So you can use what's left of the day as a reason to put aside a couple of bucks, whatever amount you can afford for a rainy day, Christmas shopping, or for your grandchildren. And did you know on this day in 1999, 22 years ago, the 6 billionth human being was born? No word on where he or she was from. But according to my humble calculations, they're celebrating their 22nd birthday as we speak. Well, let's get started with today's markets market report. Gold with a good day today, up all day. Right now in the New York spot after market, and my screen just went black. Sorry about that. It's up $7.80. It's $17.62 and change. Silver up a tad, 2 cents, $22.68. Platinum up $2, $10,013. Palladium, the lone downer, down 63, 3.1% at $2,145. Now, in the oil markets, West Texas Intermediate unchanged today, $80. And 52 cents. International Brent down slightly at 83.27. Now, the meteoric rise of oil, natural gas, and coal, too, has sent energy costs up around the world. The average price of gas at the pump now costs $3.19 compared to $2.16 a year ago. In a bid to keep prices down, Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm is considering releasing more oil from the country's Strategic Petroleum Reserve. The Biden administration, back in August, called for OPEC to increase production as well. Now, the question is, will U.S. shale producers start upping their output faster? So far, the number of active oil and natural gas rigs here is nowhere near pre-pandemic levels. And it looks, with the hurricane damage of earlier this fall, isn't going to turn that around anytime soon. So in terms of that market, you know, with demand still high and supply crunched, it looks like we're looking at some expensive fill-ups in the coming months. Now back to the rest of the markets, in the Treasury markets, we have with the dollar up today about 0.2% at 94.51. We've got a mixed bag, actually. You got some of the shorter yielding bonds that are up, the 3 month, 2 year, 5 year, all up, while the 10 year bellwether yield down a little bit at 1.57. And the long-term 30-year note down to 2.086. And in the paper markets, we've got reversal from earlier in the session. You got the Dow Jones down 117 at 34,378. You got the S&P 500 down a little over 10 at 4,350. And NASDAQ down 20, we'll call it 14,466. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is today's TGS Market Report brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. A lot of news out there the day after a bank holiday. That's not surprising. Inflation dominating the news, at least what I've seen and heard and read. The International Monetary Fund's warning that central banks like the Fed, Federal Reserve, should be prepared to tighten policy in case inflation gets out of hand. While the IMF says it's largely concurring with the Fed and others that the current global price increases eventually will ease, it noted that there's high uncertainty around those forecasts. And my question continues to be, what does eventually mean? Does that mean by the end of this year? Does it mean by the end of the first quarter next year? Does it mean, you know, well into the year or next or never? Time will tell. But, you know, the cautionary tone mentioned, this is the IMF, mentioned the U.S. as well as the U.K. and other developed economies as places where inflation risk is skewed to the upside. The IMF said while monetary policy can generally look through transitory increases in inflation, central banks should be prepared to act quickly if the risks of rising inflation expectations become more material in this uncharted recovery such as it is. Fed officials have stated that the primary weapon to fight inflation is hiking interest rates, something it hasn't done since 2018. The warning today was part of the IMF's quarterly update on global economic conditions. The fund slightly downgraded the outlook for global growth this year, but slashed the U.S. GDP forecast by a full percentage point from its July outlook, although it's still, they're still projecting a robust 6%, that's almost a full percentage point ahead of the 5.24 average forecast for all developed economies. Now, though the IMF didn't single out the Fed, much of its assessment on inflation indirectly addresses a major policy adjustment the Fed made last September. Of course, that's when Jerome Powell said it would tolerate inflation above the Fed's stated goal of 2% in the interest of generating full and inclusive employment. But the IMF warned that waiting for employment to rebound more strongly runs the risk that inflation increases in a self-fulfilling way, which in turn would undermine that Fed policy. Well, we'll see, and we'll I'll be talking more about those topics later on in today's program. Now, speaking of the IMF, the messiness of international politics is on full display this week at the spring meetings of both the IMF and the World Bank, all unfolding in our nation's capital. A number of observers believe that that's going to inevitably make it harder for those two institutions to help the world's poorest countries recover from the pandemic. The IMF's leadership has probably never been weaker. Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva is weakened by scandal, while her number two, Trump nominee Jeffrey Okamoto, is generally regarded as inexperienced and equally ineffective. Now, the IMF yesterday did say that Georgieva will keep her job after she was caught up in a scandal surrounding a World Bank survey on the ease of doing business in countries around the world. The fight, which involved Georgieva personally hiring her own crisis PR firm, pits the U.S. and Japan, who won her fired, against the EU, UK, Russia, and China, who want her to remain. And it took reported 8 separate board meetings before an agreement was finally reached that Georgieva should be allowed to keep her job. You heard me right, 8 separate meetings. And in some ways, the managing director of the IMF is one of the most political important jobs, certainly the most political in international finance. To be successful, the IMF chief needs the support of all the world's major economies, including the U.S., that support that Georgieva is lacking right now. The shareholders of the IMF are also the shareholders of the World Bank. Now that Georgieva is safe, it's almost certain that the World Bank's president, David Malpass, will also remain in his job. While Malpass was tarnished as the scandal spread, the evidence against him was never as strong as the evidence against Georgieva. And for all its geopolitical importance, the job of IMF managing director has attracted its fair share of controversy and scandal over the year. A few winners this week, but one institution has emerged more solidified, if not entrenched. The anachronistic and colonialist idea that the IMF should always be led by a European and the World Bank by an American. So if and when Georgieva is eventually replaced, you can be as sure as ever that her replacement will come from the Eurozone, rather from countries in the global south, where the fund serves millions and millions of people. Now, if you had a chance to read my blog last Friday, listed a handful of reasons why the coming months could be very opportunistic for gold. And now I'll be talking about two of them in today's third segment, the debt ceiling dilemma and the latest job reports. But I want to add one more to that list. And it shows up in a few paragraphs in the lead of my article in this week's newsletter. Investors are beginning to worry about stagflation. That's a combination of lower growth and higher inflation. And that hasn't been a thing since the early 1980s, at least here in the U.S. Excuse me. But too big to fail, Goldman Sachs reported yesterday that stagflation was the most common word in client conversations last week as equity market volatility remains elevated. And this week, they say their clients are focused on the risks posed to growth by supply chain challenges and rising energy costs. So, look, we already know that we've had elevated inflation all year. We'll know more about how subpar growth is when we get third quarter GDP numbers on the 29th and fourth quarter figures in late January. If recently updated forecasts are any indications, I mean, forecasts are all over the place. They're starting to narrow. I've seen third quarter projections down a fairly broad range, as low as 1.3%, all the way up to 5%. Atlanta's somewhat reliable GDP now consensus sees it near the middle of that range at 3.7. And that's down significantly from the second and first quarters when GDP grew 6.4 and 7.9%. So a number of recent indicators like jobs, GDP, and inflation suggest the economic rebound, recovery, again, whatever you want to call it, is slowing. Elevated inflation particularly could be damaging to investors if companies' future cash flows of financial assets are impacted by the double whammy of low growth and higher inflation. World Gold Council research on this, which is excellent, finds that defensive assets like gold and silver are the best performers in a stagflationary environment where the opportunity cost from non-yielding assets is lower. Gold has seen good to excellent returns in these periods. There's a nice chart in our newsletter that shows this. Gold both standing alone and relative to other assets. Indeed, if past is prologue, gold and silver prices could skyrocket in the coming months, boosted along with elevated risk, stock market weakness, low interest rates, and especially negative and a weaker dollar. For all your precious metal needs, you know where to call. Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. As the branding says, we've been providing financial security for over a quarter of a century. I reluctantly focus on even, quote, these too big to fail CEOs and CFOs, but sometimes they have something to say that is part of our mantra, and so it's convenient, if not worthwhile, to mention them. Now, global supply chain hiccups caused by the pandemic have put a damper on economic growth, we know, but the problem will be a fleeting one, according to Jamie Dimon, CEO of too big to fail JP Morgan Chase. Dimon, who, as you know, spent part of last week trying to justify his $31 million compensation package per year, said at a conference held by the Institute of International Finance, "I should never do this, but I'll make a forecast." This is him now. "This will not be an issue next year at all. This now is the worst part of it. I think great market systems will adjust for it, just like companies have." Well, the pandemic has laid bare how interconnected global supply systems really are. For instance, we know the shortage of semiconductor chips has hampered manufacturers of cars and electronics for a year now. The shortage of willing workers has resulted in container ships sitting idle at major ports and delays in shipping those goods to retailers around the world. While some experts believe some pain will continue for up to two more years, Dimon certainly has a rosier view. And who wants sitting on 31 mil a year? He believes the economy is set up for growth over the next few years, at least part of which is because of the strength of the almighty U.S. consumer. And the strength of our engineer, Todd, tells me it's time for our first break. So please stick around. We'll be back after these few important messages. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on shortwave radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, sitting in for Melody today. Hope you're having a great day wherever you are. Boy, job openings declined in August for the first time this year, though they did remain near a record high, again, as demand for labor wavered somewhat amid these rising variant cases during that month. The number of available positions fell off to 10.4 million from an upwardly revised 11.1 in July. That's according to the Labor Department's JOLT survey, J-O-L-T. Economists expected 11 million openings. Meanwhile, more people voluntarily left their jobs, underscoring how wage increases, sign-on incentives, and a large variety of job vacancies are fueling this significant turnover. The so-called quits rate, or the number of quits in the month as a percent of total employment, increased to a record 2.9%. And despite the pullback in job vacancies, the still elevated level of those openings point to a persistent mismatch between labor supply and demand throughout the economy. We have businesses ranging from manufacturers to restaurants. They're all desperate for workers. But workforce participation remains depressed amid choppy school reopenings, build-up savings account, and yes, some ongoing virus fears. Now, the reduction of these factors in the coming months should support additional hiring, but the timing of when this will occur, obviously, remains uncertain. New COVID cases are falling again, but labor force participation has remained stubbornly low, around the same level for months. In fact, participation declined in September as fewer people actually looked for work. Now, for every unemployed American in August, there were 1.2 openings, job openings. Vacancies declined in healthcare, accommodations, and food services, plus state and local education, teachers. Total hires fell in August to 6.3 million, reflecting declines in those industries I just mentioned. The hire rates decreased to 4.3%. Layoffs and discharges decreased. Now, the JOLTS figures trail the government's monthly jobs data. That report out last week showed payrolls trailing forecast for second month in a row, rising just 194,000 in September. And separate figures show a record share of small business owners, 51%, saying they had vacant positions they couldn't fill in September. A record 42% of small firms said they raised compensation for their employees, and nearly a third of others indicated they planned to do so in the coming 3 months. And thanks to the New York Fed's latest monthly survey, we know that consumer expectations for inflation are continuing to rise. They rose again in September amid elevated price pressures. American household expectations for inflation 1 year from now rose to 5.3% last month. That's up from 5.2% in August. Median expectations were around 4.2%. So it's hanging substantially more than twice the level of the Fed's goal of 2. Now, again, those are the results of the New York Fed's monthly survey of consumer expectations. Both marked the highest readings on record in the survey's 8-year history. Now, inflation, as measured by the Fed's preferred gauge, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, the PCE, was 4.3% in the 12 months through August, again, well above the Fed's 2% target. But Fed officials, like its chair, Jerome Powell, chalked up the elevated rates to supply chain bottlenecks and other transitory pressures tied to the reopening of the economy as the pandemic recedes. They continue to say they expect inflation to drift back down to about 2% by the end of next year. Still, central bankers keep a close eye on inflation expectations because they believe, they actually know, that expectations are a key determinant, a key factor of the course of actual future inflation. Economists at Too Big to Fail Deutsche Bank say they now expect the Fed to begin raising interest rates from their current virtually zero level in December next year, slightly earlier than previously anticipated, in large part due to the rise in various measures of expectations. The New York Fed noted that the longer-term 5-year ahead in expectations still appear to be as well anchored as they were 2 years ago before the start of the pandemic. So, certainly inflation and now slow growth on people's minds, and that combination, stagflation, has been real good for gold, silver too, over the past 2 decades. Now, almost every facet of the vital world of logistics has been in a tailspin over the past 18 months, with industry observers expecting little improvement until sometime next year, at the earliest, it turns out. With supply chains not looking that they're going to normalize anytime soon, analysts at a number of trading houses, this one RBC Capital Markets, Royal Bank is that Royal Bank of Scotland? Well, RBC Capital Markets have come up with a custom metric known as the time of turnaround to gauge whether global ports are increasing or decreasing container discharge times and clearing congestion. Using near real-time geospatial intelligence, which is available thanks to those thousands of satellites hovering above us, they include ship tracking and cell phone location data. RBC and others are able to assess the pace and direction of the trends at 22 of the world's largest and most prominent ports. Michael Tran of RBC says a lot of investors, hedge funds, pension funds, mutual funds, corporations as well, are all aware of the supply chain issues, but it's hard to quantify. He added that this new metric has really caught fire with so many investors around the world. According to RBC, 77% of the ports were experiencing abnormally long times of turnaround. No surprise there. The latest reading of Bloomberg's tracker is showing similar pileups, with the number of vessels waiting to enter one of the world's busiest ports at the highest in several months. RBC's data showed a surge in demand for goods, logistically jumbled global container and ship positioning, shortages of longshore workers, and poor port operations overall have all led to extended waiting times. And while the number of ships in circulation has been relatively constant recently, rising about 3% per year, the exceptional demand for products has seen more containers packed onto each ship. And you couple that with the longshore worker and, yeah, the trucker shortages, the results, longer discharge times. Still, the difference in performance at the world's most prominent maritime hubs has varied greatly. The most efficient operation is in Malaysia, which has handled an average of 131 ships a week and taken 1.7 days to service each vessel. But that's even that's up compared with 1.3 days in the two-year period from 2017 to 19. The worst performance, predictably, I'm afraid, is at Los Angeles and Long Beach here in the United States, where the average turnaround time almost doubled this year to 6.4 days from 3.6 a couple of years ago. Again, that's not surprising because a lot of goods from Asia head here, and also because these are huge ports and certainly much larger than in Malaysia. The LA Long Beach services an average of 42 ships weekly this year compared with 39 in the period a couple of years ago. Now, China's Shanghai port is by far the biggest operation, handling an average of 350 ships weekly, taking 4.5 days to service each vessel. That's a lot of... Now, quite a controversial proposal. One of the proposals in the, I think this is in the SOFT, the so-called SOFT reconciliation bill, the $3.5 trillion package that's being negotiated as we speak. And as we told you a couple of weeks ago, when the Biden administration looked for ways to pay for the president's social policies, it proposed raising revenue by cracking down on $7 trillion, it says, in unpaid taxes, mostly from wealthy Americans and big business. To help find those funds, the administration wants banks to give the IRS new details on their customers and provide data for accounts with total annual deposits or withdrawals worth more than $600. Now, that's not $6,000, $60,000, or $600,000. That's $600. And that sparked an uproar among banks and Republican lawmakers who say giving the IRS such power would be an enormous breach of privacy and, well, as well as government overreach. And I'm just looking at this number and thinking total annual deposits or withdrawals. Well, that's got to be just about, you know, everybody. I mean, even among the poorest could, I mean, they could get a check and from the IRS for as a tax refund or their that, which contains a large earned income tax credit. That number just seems awfully, awfully low if they're going after wealthy Americans and big businesses. Trust me, I'm not concerned about the impact that's going to have on particularly our larger banks, even medium-sized banks. Some of the small community banks certainly could be a hassle and a bigger expense for sure. But banks and their trade groups are now running advertising and letter writing campaigns to raise awareness and concern about the proposal. As a result, you have banks from Denver to Philadelphia say they're being inundated with calls and emails and in-person complaints from both everyday savers and small business owners who are worried about the proposal and what it means. Too big to fail banks like J.P. Morgan Chase, have issued talking points to their bank tellers on what to tell angry customers who call or come into a branch to complain about this. But listen, banks already submit tax forms to the IRS about the interest that customer accounts accrue. But the new proposal would require them to share account balances. so that the IRS can see if there are large discrepancies between the income people and businesses report and what they have in the bank. The IRS could audit or investigate the gaps to see if those taxpayers are evading their obligations. Both administration officials and some others who support this move say the government needs more information about taxpayers to crack down on those who don't pay what they owe. The measure, which would affect an estimated 100 plus million households and millions of businesses, is estimated to capture $460 billion in additional revenue over a decade, particularly from the wealthiest Americans. Treasury officials say this effort isn't about tracking individual transactions and is not aimed at lower or middle class households. $600 threshold was chosen apparently to weed out accounts that are generally dormant or get little use, like children's accounts, while still giving the government the broadest possible visibility. Administration and officials, in fact, say audits of taxpayers who earn less than $400,000 a year will not go up. Treasury Department spokesperson Alexandra Lamanna says this is about making sure the top 1% can't evade $160 billion a year in taxes. Whew. It's a big leap of faith, ladies and gentlemen. Get the other side. Top Democrats in Congress say that empowering the IRS is the key to making the economy more fair, more equitable. Senator Elizabeth Warren says strengthening information reporting as well as providing stronger IRS funding would ensure that we focused enforcement on the biggest fish. The problem is, I mean, if you want to use that metaphor, bigger fish eat what? Smaller fish. So it goes, you know, logic suggests that, and we know that smaller fish hang around bigger fish. So it means that the net trying to capture the big fish is inevitably going to reel in some smaller fish. And I mean, on the one hand, presumably the law that the regulation that authorizes this will prevent or prohibit the IRS from auditing these less well-off taxpayers. Well, in any event, we'll know more later. We'll keep you abreast. This is Financial Survival. We'll be back after another break. Stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of other business today. We're at 1-800-375-4188. Now, as I mentioned, our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. You can sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs at DGScoins.com, DGScoins.com. They're also available on our Facebook page at DGS Coins, one word, the at sign, DGS Coins. Of course, Wall Streeters are looking for any silver lining in Friday's disappointing jobs report. So today, they're pointing to the headline U3 unemployment rate dropping below 5% for the first time since the pandemic sent workers home by the tens of millions last year. But here's the thing. A good chunk of what pushed it down to 4.8% was reduced labor force participation. The labor force, which basically includes anyone who either has a job or is actively looking for one within the past 4 weeks, ticked down by 183,000 in September. People who've stopped looking for jobs aren't counted in the labor force or in the unemployment rate. The labor force participation rate has been persistently stuck in the 61.5% area since June of last year, a recovery of less than half its pandemic nosedive. September's decline suggests that many Americans have, for all intents and purposes, given up on finding jobs, at least for now. There's still 5 million fewer people working than there were in February last year. There are two major reasons for that, women and recent retirees. Now, aside from the fact that we still haven't had enough time go by since the enhanced pandemic unemployment benefits ended around Labor Day, we'll certainly know more about that after we see a few more jobs reports. But the meantime, the participation rate for women, more often than not, the primary caregivers for kids or elderly parents, slipped again in September to 57%. Actually, the rate for men went up to 70%. And more, mostly affluent people near retirement age are calling it quits early. Well, why? Well, they can afford it, thanks to significant growth in asset values like stocks and real estate over the last year and a half, and just increased savings overall. The irony, of course, is that the Fed has been waiting for more job growth before pulling back on its emergency market support. But it turns out that support may be contributing to the lack of job growth among workers closing in on retirement age. Oh, the eminently more accurate unemployment figure, by the way, as measured by the government's U6 rate, was 7.9% in September. So mark my word, we're not nearly as close to full or maximum employment as we're being led to believe. And then there's the debt ceiling dilemma. 11 Senate Republicans voted on Thursday with all 50 Democrats to temporarily extend the government's debt limit until December 3rd. After months of not cooperating, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell offered Majority Leader Chuck Schumer the deal to increase the ceiling enough for the Treasury to continue paying the bills into early December, Still, Congress is staring down the same potential financial catastrophe with no clear long-term answer in sight. Without another short-term extension, the country was looking down the not-so-smiling barrel of a 12-gauge shotgun set to go off sometime between October 18th and early November. And as I wrote in last week's newsletter, Democrats and Republicans are at an impasse over how to actually fix the problem. Although I'm not so sure that either party wants to. Republicans continue to argue that Democrats who control both chambers of Congress and the White House should address the issue on their own without any GOP votes. Democrats, on the other hand, insist the issue is a shared bipartisan responsibility since the majority of ours approved deficit finance spending during the prior administration. Well, House Speaker Pelosi and Schumer have been clear that they don't want to do this on their own, especially using budget reconciliation. Pelosi reiterated that at her Monday morning press conference today. Tuesday, excuse me. Last Monday, Schumer filed cloture on Senate Democratic resolution to suspend the debt ceiling through December 2022, setting up a vote to break a Republican filibuster on it later this week. But Republicans are expected to unanimously block the bill from advancing, as McConnell has promised. That leaves little option for a path forward, especially as another deadline hangs over Congress's collective head. The president has called the reconciliation process fraught with all kinds of potential danger for miscalculation and warned against it. Now, that may have been more compelling last week with little more than just 8 to 10 days until Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said the government would run out of money to pay its bills, namely interest due on Treasury bonds. But he didn't entirely rule it out either, arguing that he was only going to cross that bridge if and when he got there. Well, Mr. President, Madam Speaker, Mr. Majority Leader, it's time. Lawmakers are used to confronting major deadlines and waiting until the last minute to address them. I'm convinced it appears as an essential duty on their job description. Take what happened a week and a half ago, for example, when Congress narrowly averted another government shutdown. In that case, lawmakers faced an absolute deadline, a midnight on September 30th, to act before government funding expired. Ultimately, both chambers of Congress cleared a stopgap bill to extend funding to early December and prevent a shutdown literally hours before the deadline. Now, however, now that there are 7 weeks until the new debt ceiling would precipitate a financial crisis, it's time for Congress to get to work. And by that, I'm afraid I mean it's time for Dems to get to work and go it alone for the sake of our economy and nation as a whole. You know, likely be a time-consuming, political, difficult process, with the R's using every opportunity to paint the D's as nothing but a brand of drunken Robin Hoods. Another voterama would get the reconciliation process started, and another one would end the process. And that's two more rounds of debate for all of them to launch lengthy all-night vote marathons. Just some more pages for the already far too thick congressional record. But it's something that's useful to play back during election time when they're looking for content and fodder for the campaign ads. Most Washington observers say the reconciliation process would take up to 2 weeks. So given that time flies when you're having fun, i.e. engaging in political dysfunction, the D's are going to have to decide pretty soon if they want to go that route. But the Dems' reluctance to use reconciliation apparently is real. I mean, it's clear they're sincere in their belief that it's Republicans' responsibility to help finance debts that they helped to incur.
What?
Raising the debt limit through reconciliation requires D's to vote for exactly how much they want to raise it by. And that's a huge ask for Democrats up for re-election next year. So there's a question of, you know, is it gamesmanship? Is it cowardice? Whatever it is, one thing is almost certain. That is, unless reconciliation fails to get enough votes and there's no way to avoid a debt default, this president is not going to authorize Janet Yellen to strike a $1, $2, or $3 trillion platinum coin to solve this problem. That option, as I explained last week, has limited but growing support from the likes of economists and Nobel laureate, but more importantly, just a few members of Congress. But whatever, it's just too far out, too gimmicky and too unproven for a guy like Joe Biden to get behind. And that's a good thing, at least for now. Now, remaining time we have for today's program, TINA, an acronym for There Is No Alternative, T-I-N-A, TINA. That's been a tenet of faith in U.S. debt and equity markets for so long that its ongoing existence is literally taken for granted. But what if allegiance to TINA is faltering along with, well, continuing rise in the country's debt? The $14 trillion treasuries market is the biggest of its kind in the world, and by virtue of its size and liquidity, is critical to the functioning of the global financial system. As such, it's assumed to be indispensable. But this depends on the integrity of the U.S. as a sovereign borrow, right? Well, the Institute of International Finance, IIF for short, has noted that on recent occasions, treasuries have stopped behaving like a safe haven asset. Well, we've known that for some time, haven't we? That's been dismissed as a technicality, though. Yet the IIF said it is at least possible that something more serious may be underway. In 2020, the U.S. saw foreign outflows from treasuries, which is notable because as a safe haven asset, they should have seen inflows at a time of heightened risk aversion brought on by the pandemic. Now, foreign inflows picked up again this year, but they're not reassuring for a purported safe haven asset. Now, markets appear to be reassessing the status of Treasury debt as U.S. government borrowing continues to soar with no end in sight. Leading central banks like the People's Bank of China and the Bank of Russia have been moving their holdings of international reserves away from U.S. Treasuries for some time. Well, that's a response to geopolitical considerations, and so that's likely to continue for some time. Well, U.S. debt markets are at the heart of the network of financial arteries that keep the global economy functioning. They play a central role with treasury interest rates, not LIBOR so much anymore, providing the fundamental benchmark for the pricing of most financial assets, certainly here in the United States. The first sign of something being amiss came last March, when yields in the market shot higher, meaning that treasury bill prices were falling. It took $1.5 trillion in Fed QE initially to stabilize the treasury market, and the problem didn't end there. Funds continued to flow out of the market last year, while funds flowed into other leading debt securities like German bunds and Japanese government bonds. The IIF noted because a change in how markets see treasuries would have far-reaching consequences, the U.S. macro picture deserves far greater consideration today in the debate. Well, and markets have good cause to be concerned about the size of the U.S. government debt. So far, the reduction in foreign demand for treasuries has been offset by increasing demand from, yes, domestic investors, specifically mutual funds, driven by increased domestic savings. Key question is what will happen when those savings decline back to long-term averages, the Fed tapers, and stops buying treasuries and other government notes. There's no alternative source of demand materializing that'll push treasury yields higher. Without an alternative source of demand, that will push treasury yields higher. Sorry. Japan's the biggest single foreign holder of treasuries with about $1.3 trillion June 2020, soon to be the most stable holder given its close ties with us. And the same probably goes for the UK, which holds almost half a trillion worth of treasury. But what of China? China's surpassed the $1 trillion mark, and current tensions between Beijing and Washington might suggest that China won't be a long-term loyal holder. There are others out there as well, Russia particularly. So it hardly needs saying how risky the implied threat of rising treasury yields could be when inflation already looks like a powder keg waiting to blow and when global debt's at record highs. For now, investors will have to hope that these plumbing tweaks continue to hold the treasury and global bond markets together and that it hasn't sprung a dangerous and lasting leak. Besides, there's already an alternative to treasuries, isn't there? Always has been. So move over, Tina. I've already found my choice. It's called gold. Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll return on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow along with Wendy Wilson, Apothecary Herbs. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks, as always, to our producer and engineer, Todd, and you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.